خمسة.
Thank you, Brother Pastor. I appreciate that introduction. You don't know my past, and you certainly will not know my future. I'm glad to be here tonight in this elegant building. This is an elegant building, and you are an elegant audience. Somebody says, I don't know what that word elegant means. That's a beautiful word. It comes from the Greek word lego, which means I say. I am saying that you are an elegant audience tonight and living and worshiping in an elegant building. I appreciate the artistry of this piano and of this one here. Beautiful piano playing, beautiful singing, beautiful in every way. I'm happy to be here tonight. This is the first time I've been here in Armagh since the days of Brother Alan Atkinson. You better know him. Fine man, fine pastor, fine leader, fine speaker. Now lives in the state of Mississippi, way, way down in Dixie. Dixie was where I came from and where most of you came from. Fine land, except I don't like the tornadoes and neither do you. I much prefer the earthquakes of California than the tornadoes on the Midwest and the land of Dixie. Thank you for all the specials tonight. Very beautiful songs, Harry. Very beautiful time. Somebody says, that old geezer has a short haircut. You know, I came in between the men of the 19th century and the 20th century. The men in the 19th century wore their hair long and their beard long. You've seen their pictures. And they didn't start this long hair and long beard in this century until about 1950 or something like that. But I was born in the first part of this century. I was born at the time when they had short hair. And so I wear still 19 and 30 haircuts. I was in the barber shop last Saturday. And coming next to me was a boy about 15 years of age with long hair. And he must have just come from a garage, Ford garage, and wiped his head on that garage floor. I have never seen such a greasy head of hair. I asked the barber, I said, when you get to him, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to give that boy a head wash first. That's what it needed. It was too greasy to cut. So I'm happy to be here tonight. This is fine. This is a grand occasion. I appreciate the invitation of being here. Appreciate the invitation of this pastor. He and I teach from the same school, but I don't know what he teaches, and he doesn't know what I teach. We never meet until the break, when there's coffee time, punch time, and donut time. Now, we fellows don't, in the punch time, we don't punch one another with boxing gloves. I think they drink punch there, don't they, Brother Wayne? I don't engage in their punches, but anyway, it's a break time, and we're always glad when that time comes. Well, Pastor, how long do I have to stand up here? I don't think they won't look at me for an hour. I'm from Lancaster, California, brother, and I quit sermonettes. They won't let me speak in that church longer than 25 minutes. If I preach 30 minutes, one of the deacons will come up to me and say, now listen, hubby, if you do that again, you're going out. You're going to be fired. And I say, well, okay, there are lots of churches in California without a pastor. So I just go to one of them. Well, my brother, let's turn to the book of Hebrews. We'll get out of the brass tacks here after a while. Book of Hebrews, the 8th chapter, and verse number 10. Excuse me, my throat is a little on the fast side tonight. I woke up thankfully yesterday morning with a laryngitis. Preachers usually catch colds in their memories, you know. The subject I'm speaking on tonight is the covenants. And we will have Hebrews 8 and beginning with verse number 10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their mind. The word mind there is from a word which means to be deep down, way deep down, because it's a compound word. And we don't have an English word that corresponds to the word written by this writer 2,000 years ago. I'm sorry that I cannot explain that so I can put it across to you. You are an intelligent congregation. You have lots of brains. But sometimes it's pretty hard to get a Greek word across to an American who speaks English. Anyway, the word mind right here means way down yonder in the lower level of a man's thinking, where he lives with himself. You know, he gets on the bed and he's tossing and he turns and he goes to sleep and he gets to think. Boy, I'm sure. That's that deep down thinking. And that's what this is right here, this mind. I will put my laws into my mind and cut or chisel them into their hearts. That's what the word right means right there. W-R-I-T-E in the King Version. It means to cut or chisel or engrave. You don't see that, Brother Ed. I can do it.
I'll take the word for it.
All right. In their hearts. Chisel it there in such a way that it will never be erased, never be cut out. That's what God said right here. I will be to them a God, and certainly every nation under the sun today needs a God. Besides the Pope, and besides communism, and besides whatever other gods they have. I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not. You know that word not right there in the Greek text is double. I will not. Teach every man, or they shall not teach every man his neighbor. Somebody says, one of you put two knots there, because the Greek had it. And my friends from the Greek put two knots in the phrase. It didn't mean the affirmative, or yes, but it meant strong as horseradish, as strong as a whole boxcar full of onions. That's right. They shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall know me from the smallest of them to the greatest of them. I will be merciful to their wrongdoings, and their sins will I remember no more. Let's just leave out and their iniquities, because those words are not in the most ancient manuscripts. Now somebody says, preacher, you're changing our Bible. I'm not changing anything. You go to scholars. You go to scholars, my brother, and look it up. And there it is. I'm not trying to change your Bible. You want to go to the King James Version? Great, that's fine with me. I don't care. You know, the Baptist wrote the Bible 2,000 years ago, brother. I mean, Landmark Missionary Baptist preacher wrote the Bible 2,000 years ago. In Greek. That's right. I'm not trying to be a smart man. No. It's coming in the kingdom. And truth is what we want to have. We don't want anything else but truth. That's what Dr. Guthrie used to tell us, boys. So we're not going to have anything but truth. All right. 13. Didn't that he say a new covenant he hath made? The first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is getting vanished away. Talking about that old lawn mower vanishing away. All right, I told you tonight that I would preach on the covenant. Let's start, because my time is limited and I'm not going to keep you here over time. Let's start with the covenant of Eden. God made a covenant in Eden, and by the way, that word Eden means paradise. That's right, E-D-E-N means paradise. It means a place of plenty of delight, a place of delight, where the air is so balmy, that everything is so nice. No sin, nothing to shock, nothing to grind on one's nerve, nothing to send anybody to a hospital, nothing to send anybody to suicide. Boy, what a place Eden was. That's where God put the first human pair, right there in paradise. On this earth. Did you know, brethren, that's why God has ordained a millennium? He ordained a millennium that this earth might once again be Eden, might once again be paradise, might once again be a place of delight and pleasantness, so that man could enjoy life to the fullest. That's the reason he's ordained a millennium. The prophets tell us that. The apostles tell us that. All right. Excuse me. The covenant made in Eden, place of delight. And the first one is to replenish the earth with a new order, and that's of man. God placed man in this beautiful paradise, man and woman. I read in a book recently that before Adam and Eve were created, there was a human race. No, that's a lie. Adam and Eve were the first pair of the human race. The word Adam literally means humanity, mankind, or human race. It's more literal than that, brethren. Adam means fleshly colored. Flesh colored. You know, when you're young, I'm no longer young. I'm not going to tell you my age, but I'm not that young. You know, when you're young, you're fresh. You've got a ruddy, reddish complexion. You don't need any cosmetics, no. It's just that way. That's the meaning of the word Adam. Right. Flesh color, blood color, ruddy. That's the meaning of the word Adam. Right. What does Eve mean, preacher? Eve means life. The mother of all living. Never laid to get started on the baby. That's natural. She was the mother of all living. Eve means life. Human life. God gave to man the power to reproduce himself just as God created the first pair in the Garden of Eden. With a spirit, mind, and body. Rightly. All right. He was the beginning of the animal creation. He was the head to keep the garden. Boy, what a... Oh, my. How easy that was. Head to keep that garden. And next, to abstain from eating of the tree of knowing good and bad. Now, God specifically and pointedly and sternly and positively told Adam not to eat of that tree. Adam, leave that tree severely alone. Don't you even look at it. There you are, straight up. Nothing bad. You tell them not to do anything, and boy, they jump for it like a hungry trout. Don't eat of that tree of knowing good and bad. And then the penalty for that was death. Death. Death in soul, death in mind, death in body. I'll give anybody here tonight a $10 bill if you will give me a definition of death. I'll give anybody here tonight a $10 bill if you will give me a definition of life. I'll give anybody in this house tonight a 30. No, I'm not praying on you. I'm not praying on you. Because you don't know what life is, and you don't know what death is, and you don't know what cause is. And I'll put you in this house tonight.
You may have a PhD degree, you don't know.
You don't know the answer to those questions. We've got a gift, we've got a prize, we've got something that we don't know. What is death?
I don't know.
Only I said death is separation of the spirit from the body. Well, what is that? Nobody knows. Oh. You know, there was a man who lived in London, England, one time by the name of Lord Rothschild. He was just lived in one of the sophisticated part of London, you know. Richest Jew in the world in his day. And when his mansion was built, he was actually fresh off the fire. How that building? The building was incomplete, that much, in the district of the corner. And multitudes, as they went down that street, would look up there and see the unfinished part of that building, and they would say, well, couldn't the richest man on earth finish his mansion? Why leave that unfinished? The answer was that Lord Rothschild was a pilgrim and a stranger on this earth, like Abraham, and that he would soon be incarnate. He was going to die. And his unfinished house of that testified that he was on his way, like a pilgrim, from this earth to eternity. You and I are going that same way, brother. We're going that same way. There was a Baptist preacher one time who had these words printed on his tomb: the lodge of a traveler on his way to Jerusalem. That's where we're going. We're going to that brand new city called Jerusalem, the city of peace. All right, let's take up this second covenant. A woman made with that. This covenant lays down its limits for the life of fallen man, conditions which must remain until the millennial reign of Christ, when the creation also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glory of liberty of the sons of God, says Paul in Romans 8:21. The serpent, Satan's tool, was cursed. He was cursed in that his legs were cut off, his feet were cut off, and he had to crawl along on his back. Brethren, is there another animal on the face of the earth that crawls on its stomach as a snake does? Let's think. I'll just ask that question. Is there another animal on the face of the earth that crawls on its stomach as a snake crawls? Come on now, let's think. Will an earthworm do that? Did you call an earthworm an animal? Let's think. You know, Dr. Guthrie used to teach that thought that thinking is a nice trick if you can do it. He was one of my teachers. I think he's still around here from teaching. Thinking is a nice trick if you can do it. You know, Satan generates that beast and deceives our first parent. You know the story. I don't have to go over it. And his legs would come off, his feet would come off as a curse. You know that curse will remain on him all during the 1,000 years of Christ, too, brother. He won't get up and walk on four legs like a dog or a cat. Even in the mud and the rain, he'll still be crawling on his stomach. That was a curse. Every time we see a case, no matter what variety or species, no matter, we realize that that same reaches all the way back to Eden. One of his ancestors calls our first parents to sin. So we know that. All right, the same state of the woman. First, let's go back to the promise of the Redeemer in 3:15. We don't have time for that. Let's go to the same state of the woman. Multiplied conception, motherhood right to follow, the headship vested in man. I know that some of you ladies hate that. Headship vested in man. And that's the reason we have a lot of ladies going around over this country. with placards and demonstrations and hollering, saying, I want to make as much money as a man makes. Well, before a lot of persons and things, they can make more than a man. I don't care. Go ahead. If they want to make money, pour it on. Money is the god of this world anyway. They might as well worship at that altar of money as anybody else. Well, the headship is vested in man. And if a husband doesn't have an attachment enough to be the head of his house, then maybe his wife ought to run off and leave. I've seen some men who have got hip sweeps, and I wondered why they got paid the hip sweeps. James Sterling Morton was the Secretary of Agriculture under Mr. Grover Cleveland. Excuse me. And he married a lady whose maiden name was Carolyn French. And while he was still Secretary of Agriculture under Mr. Grover Cleveland, his wife took sick and died. Well, he put a tombstone at the head of her grave. And after that stone had been set, he took his three boys, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Morton, out to see his tombstone. The husband of Jay and the wife of Jay Sterling Morton. And then the names of the boys were written under there. The mother of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Morton. And as his father led these three boys out to this grave, to see this gravestone, they set it on there, and of course all four of them were weak. And after they had gotten control of their emotions, Mr. Morton said to these three boys in a stern voice, if you three boys, or one, if one of you boys do anything to bring shame or disgrace to your mother, if she were living, your name will be chiseled over that stone. And it so happened that those three boys grew up to be worthy and honorable men, and their names were allowed to be saved from that stone. Just motherhood, lengthy sorrow. Lengthy sorrow. That's the comment made with Adam. So we're all headed to the cemetery because of Adam's sin. There's a covenant made with Noah. The judgment of the flood marks the end of the covenant with Adam. This is young lady, you're very fine, I appreciate that. You're extremely fine. Papa, thank you so much. The judgment of the flood marks the end of the covenant with Adam. The covenant with Noah puts humanity to a new test. This is the time the covenant with Noah made man ruler over men. The highest function is the judicial taking of life. Other powers, of course, are implied. But in the covenant with Noah, man is responsible to govern the world for God, both Jews and Gentiles. They both made mess of things. The Jews, you know, failed and went into captivity three times, four, and the Gentiles have failed and will fail, and both Jews and Gentiles have governed the nations and governed the world for their own brutal selfishness. And you brothers know that. And that's the reason Jesus Christ has to come back here to put a stop to the selfishness and the brutality of Gentile nations and also Jews. Somebody says, what's wrong with America? Well, you know as much about as I do. You've got TV in your home. You know exactly what's wrong. And so the Islamic covenant is repeated in Genesis 8:21. The National Park, Yellowstone National Park, is loaded down with what they call lodgepole pine. Those trees produce a cone that will stay on that place for years and years and years. They won't fall off. When a fire comes along and burns the forest, burns the park, those light pole pines will be burned, of course, and that's when the cones fall. And they will burst in the intensity of that heat. When the fire is open, everything else is off, those cones will spring to life, and a brand new forest will come out of the lungs and the devastation. God takes care of his own creation, brother. He knows how to do it. He fixed it that way from the beginning. And that's what we find here in this covenant with Noah. Human government was established. The earth was made secure against another universal system of water. And they, I don't have to get on this because they say they're racist, you're racist, you're only coming to end, you're racist. But it's in the Bible, it's in the ninth chapter of Genesis. If you want to, you can read Genesis 9, 24 and 25. Right there it says that Ham, from Ham will descend an inferior and slave his posterity. Now listen, the Negro is not a slave. He's not a slave. The Negro is not a slave. Now that's talking about the Canaanites. If you'll read closely, you'll find it to be true. It's talking about the Canaanites here in Genesis 9, 24 and 25. Those nations that lived in the land of Canaan, when Joshua and the Israelites entered that land, God says, I want you to wipe every one of those people out. Wipe them out. From the smallest baby to the oldest man. Wipe those people off the face of the earth. They're under a curse. God cursed Canaan, not Ham. He didn't curse Ham himself. So the Negro is not under a curse. I've heard that. Men in the South, in Arkansas, and Oklahoma, and other states out there saying that the Negro is under a curse. No, the Negro is not under a curse. He has as much right to liberty and life and the pursuit of happiness as you and I have. That's right. A brown colored man has that much right too. A red skinned man has that much right also. Or if the skin is yellow, well, he has that much right also. We live in America. We live under a constitution that gives all colors, all skins, and all races the right to have happiness and make as much money as possible. God's not interested in the skin of a man. He's interested in his heart. Solomon said, Son, give me thine heart. He didn't say, give me your skin. God doesn't want the skin of a man. He wants his heart. And when he gets his heart, he gets the best part of a man. That man then can do the will of God. Excuse me, buddy. I'm not mad. I hear my voice echoing in this building. I'm not used to this mechanical contrivance here. That thing looks like a... That's not the head of a cobra. I don't have one of those in my head now. I'm used to standing up and burrowing like a mouse. Somebody. Let's go to this covenant with Abraham. My time is getting away here. Let's go to this covenant with Abraham. God said to Abraham in the first chapter of Genesis, I will make of thee a great nation. I'm going to make of one man now a great nation. And that reminds me of a fairy story I read one time about a dog. And this dog bragged and bragged and bragged and bragged. And oh, he just kept on blowing wind. He kept on bragging about being the fastest dog in the country and that there was no other creature under the sun that could escape his claws and his attack. Well, one day there was just a simple little cottontail rabbit that got up and began running as fast as he could. And that dog was chasing this cottontail rabbit. And the rabbit got away from him and escaped. And the other dogs just made, oh, they just laughed and they wah-wah. You bragging about being the fastest dog in the country and you couldn't even catch a little cottontail. Well, that old braggart said that little cottontail was running running for his life. I was running only for the pleasure of catching him. That's the reason he left. You know, my friends, when a man has a high motive, he will reach high to gain that motive. When a man has a low motive, Abraham had a high motive, my friend, when he left Ur of Chaldees and obeyed Jehovah and went to a land he had never seen before.
Keeping the three annual feasts, the priesthood, and the
instructions for the conquest of Canaan. That's all included in the law and the covenant that God made with Moses. I remember reading one time about a Baptist preacher who went to a home, and in that home there was a little boy about 7 years old. One day this Baptist preacher decided he would get out of the house and take a walk. And so he left the home and he went out across the pasture. And he was following the pig train. And this little boy was going along with him. Directly he found the little boy holding back. Well, it was a nice day. The sun was shining and the air was heavy with the aroma of flowers. And the little boy said, "You're on track." But he said, "Hey, come on, honey, let's go. This is a nice day. Everything's just fine." The little boy said, No, said, "I'm not going with you." "Why aren't you going with me?" But he said, "This is the way that we're in. Down there at the end of that way, there's a mud hole, there's a briar patch. If we keep going this way, we're going to end up in that mud hole, and we're going to be stuck by those briars. And I'm not going with you any further. Now, you may go on if you wish, but I'm staying right back here." You know, my friends, that's what happened to Israel when they violated God's law in Old Testament times. They finally ended up in a mud hole made by the Gentiles, and a briar patch made by the Gentiles. That's what they did. And for the last 2,000 years, nearly, they have been in that bog and in that briar patch. All right, the covenant made by Moses. They were to be scattered for disobedience. That's Deuteronomy 28, 63 to 68. Now, my friends, let's go to the covenant made with David. I'm going to speak here 5 more minutes to be on quick. The covenant made with David. The millennial reign of Christ is founded on the fifth covenant. There was a Davidic house, that is, the house of David, a posterity, a family. There was a throne, royal authority. There was a kingdom or a sphere of rule in perpetuity, and that means forever. And God has ordained this covenant with David for the sake of his people. For the sake of his people. General Hancock was a general of the northern forces in the American Civil War. And when the Battle of Gettysburg was fought in July 1863, General Hancock, the northern general, was wounded very, very severely in Pickett's first charge. And Pickett was the southern general. And while he was lying there in his blood on the battlefield, his aide, his helpers, rushed up to him. And there they found a pad and a pencil in his hand, and he was laying out an order to the commissary commander to give to his men that night a fresh order of beef that they might eat that for supper. His men were on his heart, even though he had been almost mortally wounded. But he recovered from his wounds and was later able to lead his men into battle. That's exactly why, my brethren, that God gave the covenant with David. He was interested in you and me. We are on his heart. We are in his heart. And therefore, we will reign with him as kings in the millennial reign of Christ. Now, let's talk a moment about the new covenant. And the Mosaic covenant was established on fear. Moses said, Mosaic law said, if you don't do this, you're going to die. If you don't do that, you're going to die. You're going to die if you don't obey the rules of Moses. But in this new covenant, it comes from the heart. It comes from the will. And we obey God because we've been born again. We obey God because we have Christ in our heart and because we want to do what God says. A little girl one time by the name of Faith, who had been out on the farm, and she went to see her grandparents, and she had learned to gather in the eggs and learned a little bit about milking the cow, and she learned some other things about the farm, And one morning she asked her grandpa, Granddad, can I milk the cow all by myself this morning? Granddad said, yeah. Oh, she went to the hook. She took down the milk bucket and she went out to the barn. And after she'd been out there about 30 minutes, Grandma said, honey, you better go out there and see what happened today. She said, I said, you mom. Grandpa was going out to the barn, he opened the barn door, and the first thing he saw was Betty with a bucket full of milk tucked under the cow's mouth, and she was feeding the milk to the cow. And she said, Grandpa, it happened that when I finished milking the cow, she put her foot in the bucket of milk and got it all dirty. And now I'm running it back through so. I'm running it back through so as to clean the milk. Now listen, my brother, God Almighty is not going to run this age in which we live back through the cow, as it were, in order to cleanse this age. This age is going to wind up in blood, 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 and rivers of blood in the Great Tribulation period, and that's the cleansing agent God will use to get it ready for the millennial reign of Christ and the reign of Jesus, the reign of you and me, during that 1,000-year period. And what's going to happen? This age gets worse and worse and worse until it shall land in the Great Tribulation period. Thank you, brethren, for your patience. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for this invitation. And thank you for your courteous attention. You have been great. You have been sweet in giving me attention. I appreciate that. And God bless you, my friend.
Could we stand just a moment, please? As we do, Brother Robert in front of me, step around here and give this man a good handshake as a representation from this crowd, from this congregation. I enjoyed it, man. All right, you may be busy. All right. This service starts in the morning at 8:30. I'm lying about that, of course. Before you start at 9, but nobody ever wants to show up when you first start, you know. But I think the program, you know, I like to be there when something starts and when it ends. If I can go in through the front door and then out through the back when it's all over. So we're going to be talking about 1 Timothy. There's some, I think, some good lessons in that book. And Brother K.D. Ward is going to be opening our program for us, and that's going to be at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock in the morning. So let's all be here at 9 o'clock. We have some of our folks that are not here yet. They're going to be on the program. Seems like we run in shifts for conferences. You have a new Bible conferences, and I've noticed that in a lot of conferences. You'll have the complexion of this crowd will change somewhat by tomorrow night. I don't know whether it's going to be better or any worse, but it'll change, and we'll have different folks here tomorrow. My special appreciation is to those of you who go all the way through, and I hope that you'll be here in the morning at 9 o'clock. We encourage the speaker starting off on a good note. Now, I'll tell you what we're going to have tomorrow. I'll put the programs out tomorrow morning, and it will be with reference to the passage of our Ephesians chapter and the speakers that we're going to have. But just to refresh your memories a little bit, we have the beginning speaker by me, Brother K.D. Ward, and then our following speaker will be Brother Glenn Pierpoint. Our third speaker will be Brother T.A. Williams, and he gets to talk about traces of deal. Amen. Preachers and deacons. And we're very fortunate this year. Last year, I had invited Brother Doug Perdue to come down in our program, speak to us on the subject of the Glory Church. There was an emergency arose in his church at the last minute. He was not able to come. But he has come down to be with us.